Good morning. Wow, is it beautiful out there? Absolutely beautiful. I rode in with South Coast Towing this morning. What a great company. And the driver, Sonny, of course, is from Southern California. And I said, it's about time, Sonny, that you brought Southern California weather here to Fairhaven and New Bedford. And he did, finally. It's beautiful out there. Make sure you're able to contact South Coast Towing if you're in an emergency situation, your car breaks down, you get in an accident. Remember, you can tell the police officer, I want to request South Coast Towing, and then they'll honor your request. So always know, and they sponsor the app here at the radio station, so you know when you bring up the app, you see a South Coast Towing ad, and of course, that's Chris Medeiros' family. What wonderful people. So South Coast Towing, that's who brought me in this morning. Without them, I wouldn't be here. So we got a big show today. We have a lot going on. A lot going on. Yesterday, I had Mike Minogue on, and today we'll have Mass Fiscal Alliance. Of course, the Massachusetts Fiscal Alliance, they are the defenders of Proposition 2.5 at the legislative level. Without Prop 2.5, I guarantee you, you would not be able to afford your property taxes. Okay? Without Proposition 2.5, I think the figure now is that the average property tax bill would be about $24,000 annually for a home in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Now, property taxes are set locally by spending of your local officials in your town meetings, city council and mayor. Proposition 2.5 is regularly under attack at the legislature. There are, now understand this, not every Democrat opposes Proposition 2.5. Not everyone. Most Democrat elected officials are benefiting from Proposition 2.5, cap on property taxes. It makes local officials work a little harder, because if you can't automatically, which is what used to happen before Proposition 2.5, what used to happen is they would just go back and raise property taxes to the point that people couldn't take it anymore. So some really great Americans who've moved on, literally, to the afterlife, Barbara Anderson, Chip Ford, Chip Faulkner. I knew Barbara Anderson really well. Really, really well. I was a great fan of hers. And I have to tell you, she was a really great, big fan of mine. And she supported me tremendously. And then was a resource for me when I got into the media. So Barbara Anderson has passed away. But she left us with a ballot initiative that passed in 1980 and is still the law of the land, Proposition 2.5. Now, understand, Proposition 2.5 has flexibility. Many of us have supported that flexibility at past town meetings, at the ballot, for specific projects, or a change in the fiscal conditions of your community. Proposition 2.5 is extraordinarily flexible. And it leaves the flexibility up to you and me, the individual voters. The individual voters. But year after year, the special interest groups lobby Beacon Hill to try to adjust, undermine, neuter the protections built into the law known as Proposition 2.5 that limit property taxes to 2.5% increase on the levy. And it can all be explained. There's a great document out there that you should look up. It's available, always was available through the Department of Revenue, and it's been carried on since the early 80s by every administration. They reproduce it. Nobody changes it. So even though you have Governor Healey, who is hostile to Prop 2.5, her administration has recreated the manual on Prop 2.5 available through the Department of Revenue. I keep a copy of it right here in the studio. Levy limits a primer on Proposition 2.5. Explains the whole law to you. It's a really, and it's not brief, but it's probably, what, 40 pages? 40-page, 30-page document. It's valuable if you own property, if you want to own property, and why you need Proposition 2.5. The organization defending Prop 2.5 today is the Massachusetts Fiscal Alliance. They are the ones defending Prop 2.5. Thank you. So, as an example, we're going to have a vote here in Fairhaven to override Proposition 2.5 to preserve some government services that you got to take a look at and decide whether you think it's good for the overall town to preserve them or to let them go. And you got to decide, and that's the beauty of Prop 2.5. It gives you, the individual, the opportunity to make a calculated decision on your tax bill and the services that you may preserve or you may lose, depending on how you vote. And everybody in town can decide. And that's going to come up June 9th. There's other things on the ballot, select board. I'm not sure how many other competitive races are. I think there's a planning board. I know there's a planning board race that's competitive. Not sure if school committee is competitive. But the reason I say all this is that yesterday they had an election in Rochester. And the victor won by a handful of votes. Now, I'm going to assume it's going to go to a recount. And but my understanding is that it was one vote. Now, I haven't looked at the results myself, but I got it from a very reliable source who's been on the ballot, understands elections, has a law degree, can read. I know he can read. And he texted me this morning saying that the school committee race in the town of Rochester was decided by one vote. One vote. One vote. And the person who lost had gone out and campaigned. I mean, they really tried. They really tried. I don't know any of the factors. I really don't know much about those races. But I do know it's all about turnout. And whether you get your friends and family, supporters, motivated to go out and vote is the difference between winning and losing, right? The difference between winning and losing. Whether you get your people to the polls. So, Fairhaven is going to have a Proposition 2.5 override. We'll have select board candidates on there as well. That race is heating up. But Proposition 2.5, whether you're for the override in Fairhaven or not, because you can be for it and still recognize the importance of Proposition 2.5 while recognizing it's not something that can't be overridden and at this time needs to be overridden. All right? Same thing with the Old Colony vote. Apparently, the towns in the Old Colony vocational system who defeated the override, the Proposition 2.5 override, to pay for a new school. So the difference is, in the Old Colony vote, it's a temporary increase. If you think 20 years, 25 years is a temporary override, right? But it is, under the terms of Prop 2.5, a debt exclusion for the purposes of building a school, a library, police station. It's for the life of the bonds. So when we did it out in Freetown and Lakeville in the 90s, it was for the length of the bonds, temporary, although it's a significant amount of time, 20 years. The override for Old Colony is one of those. However, the override for Fairhaven is for general government forever and ever. Amen. Okay? To quote my previous guest this week, Paul Overstreet, forever and ever. Amen. Fairhaven is going to raise taxes forever and ever if you vote for the Prop 2.5 override. So, just take that in consideration. It's not, in my opinion, a lot of money. But, as people say, how many cups of coffee do I have to buy, right? People go, oh, it's just a cup of coffee a week or two cups of coffee a week. You know, they make that analogy. But I've often heard, how much coffee can one town drink, right? So, again, the beauty of 2.5 is it leaves it up to me and you to make a decision based on our own personal finances, our understanding of town services and what we want to see preserved, maybe expanded. And recognize that the town of Fairhaven, it was a Board of Selectmen vote with a vote of the town meeting. But now it's going to come to everybody who's a registered voter on June 9th to make a decision for them personally. Okay? And whatever you take into account for your personal decision. But make sure that you look at it and that you make an informed decision. Whatever direction you're going in. It's entirely up to you. I don't know your circumstances. You do, I don't. So it would be, in my opinion, irresponsible of me to tell you or to even make a recommendation other than take a good look at everything that's going on. Ask questions, because your vote is your vote. My vote is my vote. Your neighbor's vote is their vote. And at the end of the day, we're going to live with a decision. So the Old Colony vote, that's going to be coming up again. Towns of Acushnet, Lakeville, Mattapoisett, Carver, they're going to have the opportunity, or the curse, however you want to look at it, of having to vote again. Because you got a regional school committee that really believes in building a new school. So, 508-996-0500. Very interesting written motion by Councilor Gomes. We'll talk more about that. Tim talked about it already, but not all of you get an opportunity to listen to Tim. And I know that I can listen to parts of Tim's show while I'm getting ready, but not all of Tim's show because I'm getting ready. So maybe you don't know about this. We'll talk more about it. I'll read it to you when we come back. If you're on hold, stay there. I will get to you. It's open phones. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
Welcome back to the program. If you don't want your feet on the ground, if you don't want your car overheating, make sure you bring it to family-owned Mack Auto Sales, located right in the city of New Bedford, right on Rivet Street. Mack Auto Sales repairs all makes and models of automobiles, including the one you're driving right now. And they'll get your car ready for the coming hot weather. You can see it out there that it's going to get real, real hot, regardless of global warming, whether that's true or false. Call Mack Auto Sales and Repair today and make an appointment at 508-565-6221. They're open weekdays, 9 to 5. You're driving a foreign car, that's perfect. Cars are great for the environment. Whether you're driving a foreign or an American car, Mack Auto Sales does a great job with all of them. They service the whole fleet of vehicles here. We have a ton of gas-burning vehicles here at WBSM and at Fun 107, and we think they're great for the environment. Ask about their aftermarket accessories and the quality used cars for sale at Mack Auto Sales in the city of New Bedford. So, Councilor Gomes wants to bring in the Inspector General to the city of New Bedford, city where he's been a city councilor for a long time. I think this is the first time Councilor Gomes has ever requested the Inspector General come in. So you know it's a serious situation. Councilor Gomes, who's been there, I think about 30 years, giving good service to the city of New Bedford. I call him the fire alarm, not ironically because you're about to lose a fire station, but because when Brian Gomes senses a problem, like a fire alarm, he starts making noise, right? And he may not have the answer to the solution to the problem, but he certainly tells you, hey, there's a problem, and we got to do something about it. Now, what's going to happen, a lot of fire alarms are going to go off and no one will respond now because it looks like you're going to lose a fire station up in Ward 1, particularly you people in Ward 1 and Ward 2. You could have a fire alarm, but it may not matter. Although they assure me they'll be able to respond in time. But how do we know? How do we know? So anyway, longtime counselor Brian Gomes is asking to send a certified letter to the Office of the Inspector General of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts requesting they conduct a forensic audit of the financial situation in the city of New Bedford that resulted in a reported surplus turning into substantial deficits in the city's financial structure over a very short period of time. So, Councilor Gomes, in a secondary motion, but they're united, obviously, in their purpose, that certified letters be sent to Governor Healey, Senator Montigny, Ways and Means Chairman Rodericks, House Speaker Mariano, Representatives Cabral, Hendricks, Markey, Ouellette, and Sylvia, requesting a supplemental budget to help close the gap of $32 million deficit that the city of New Bedford is currently facing. This one-time appropriation would prevent the closure of Fire Station Number 9, I'm reading from Council's motion, in the near future and protect the jobs of the men and women that protect the lives and property of our city. It would also prevent laying off of personnel who provide vital services to the city. This appropriation request is being presented on behalf of the city's taxpayers to provide notice to our state leadership of the funding obligations that are owed to the taxpayers of the city of New Bedford. That is the longtime city councilor, at-large city councilor, voted in by the whole city and repeatedly reelected, Brian Gomes, requesting the inspector general come down and identify the problems. That's a very interesting request. We'll see if the rest of the city council goes along with inviting the inspector general in. The second motion, not as controversial. Can I have more money? I mean, that's not as controversial. But asking the inspector general, when you're a member of the government, okay, it has the implication that you more than suspect something is going on, that you need other eyes and a less political opinion to see what you're seeing that you think is a problem. I could be incorrect here. The last time the inspector general was in the city of New Bedford, was at the request of Scott Lang for what became Home Depot, but that piece of land over there that was done under the Kalis administration for Home Depot. Scott didn't like what he'd heard about it, so he requested the inspector general come in. They issued a scathing report. It's still available if you've never read it. On the government at the time. And I suspect that Brian Gomes, who's been paying attention since well before then, but certainly during that period of time, understands that when you invite the inspector general into your city to look at your city's procedures, you're doing it with the eye that there's something wrong. There is something wrong. And that you don't have the capacity, and we don't think the city council does, obviously. And you're also inviting them, the inspector general, to investigate your body, the procedures that you have followed. Because you're not a spectator. You're not just a taxpayer. You're a member of the city council. So when Brian Gomes asks for his colleagues to invite the inspector general in, that's a serious thing and a bit controversial. And I don't know how many of his fellow city councilors will want to go along with that. Not because they shouldn't go along with it, they probably should, but do they want to answer questions about their own performances under oath to the inspector general? Obviously, Brian Gomes doesn't have any problem with that, and I wouldn't suspect he would. But the inspector general has subpoena power. They can place you under oath, ask you questions, and they often refer their findings to the U.S. attorney, if it's appropriate, to the attorney general, if it's appropriate. How often have you seen that? So it's a very important development that's going to take place or be killed by the city council tonight. What do you think? Would you like to go along with Brian Gomes? You think that this is an appropriate thing? I don't know what else Councilor Gomes can do. In other words, it may seem a bit over the top, but I don't think so. The city has an auditor. They have an auditor. You pay them, taxpayer funded. You have a chief financial officer. You have a treasurer. You have all that. You have the city council finance committee. City council has an audit committee. I remember a couple of years ago, Ryan Pereira was the chairman. He's now the city council president. He was pretty active with the audit committee. They have subpoena power. So there are internal avenues where Brian Gomes could get his answers. And maybe he is working with those people. I would assume he is, that he's working through the audit committee, that he's working through the city auditor. I mean, he's done the budgets longer than Mayor Mitchell. Certainly voted on the budgets longer than Mayor Mitchell. So, but tonight, Brian Gomes is looking for his colleagues. So that's Leo Choquette in Ward 1. Will Leo Choquette go along with Brian Gomes' request to bring in the city auditor, the state inspector general to look at process, procedures in the city of New Bedford? Will Leo Choquette go along with that? Why wouldn't he? He's one of the newest members of the city council. Why wouldn't he go along with it? Now, maybe he has reasons why he wouldn't. Scott Pemberton, the newest ward councilor, will he go along with Councilor Gomes' letter to request a forensic audit of the financial situation by the Inspector General? State Inspector General. Well, Sean Oliver. Why not? He's running for state office. This will only help his campaign. And also, he's a taxpayer in the city. He's a more fiscally conservative person, counselor, than some of the other people over there, at least by reputation. So, will Brian Gomes get the support of his at-large colleagues? This is a big move, though. As I said, the last time in my memory someone from the city of New Bedford requested the inspector general come in and look at how things work in the city of New Bedford, it was when Mayor Lang wanted the inspector general, and they did do a investigation into a land deal that today is Market Basket, but then was Home Depot. And it's a, very detailed report. I read it, but it really didn't go anywhere. They didn't refer it, and I don't believe they referred it anywhere else. But what does Councilor Gomes know, or what does he suspect that he thinks the inspector general will uncover? Because they can only go so many places. And why didn't Councilor Gomes, and he can talk to this tonight, we're going to watch. Although I have to tell you, and maybe some of you are in the same situation I'm in, I couldn't get through on the computer the last couple of nights to watch the city council. The firewall, the protective services that scan out bugs and robots and bots, kept blocking. Now, I wasn't using a computer. I was using a tablet. So maybe it was my tablet, but I don't know. That for some reason could not get through to watch the city council budget hearings. And this morning, I wanted to watch the retirement board vote, but I couldn't get through to that either. The retirement board had a vote on the COLAs. The mayor highlighted it here yesterday. He asked the retirement board, you heard him, to not vote for the COLA, to increase by 3% the retirees' pay, the pension. And I got a press release from the mayor's office as well. The very skilled John Darling sent out a press release on the mayor's opposition to the retirement board voting for a COLA. They had a meeting at 8 o'clock this morning, and they did increase the COLA. If any of the city council would like to call in and communicate how they're going to vote tonight on the Inspector General vote put forward by Brian Gomes, they're welcome to do that. 508-996-0500. Most of you have the VIP line. If you're a city council, you're welcome to use that to get in on this conversation about the Inspector General report. Well, the request by Veteran Councilor Gomes to invite the Inspector General. Request and they demand that the inspector general come in and take a look at how the city do a forensic audit. Now, why not the auditor? Why not requesting Dinah DeZoglio? We can explore that after the break. Stick around. We'll be right back.
South Coast Now with Chris McCarthy. Weekdays on 1420 AM and 99.5 FM. WBSM.
Welcome back to the program. So tonight we have a motion put forward, written motion by Councilor Gomes to request that the Inspector General of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts come in and do a forensic audit of the city's books to find out why there was such a radical swing in the finances. In December, there was a reported surplus, $13 million. Now there's a reported deficit of $32 million. That's a radical swing, right? And requesting the inspector general is a big move. But obviously, Councilor Gomes, who's been doing city budgets for 30 years, is aware of the gravity of bringing in the inspector general and the gravity of the problem. It's like I said, he's been doing city budgets longer than Mayor Mitchell, who's the longest serving mayor, certainly in my lifetime and yours. So it's no small move to bring in the inspector general, but maybe it's required. But what's interesting is, why is he not requesting the state auditor, Dinah DeZoglio, come down and do a forensic audit, right? Now, that's a very interesting distinction. I can't answer that. I cannot. I can only say this. Dinah DeZoglio is a very political person, very political. And she's at war with the attorney general, another Democrat, who lives in Dartmouth now, who is a political ally of Councilor Gomes. I know that, and that's completely legitimate. But Councilor Gomes was involved with a fundraiser for the attorney general, which certainly is right. A lot of local people support statewide people. We see that all the time, just merely putting it out there. And Dinah DeZoglio was here at the State of the City address by Mayor Mitchell. That was very interesting that Dinah DeZoglio came down from Methuen or Boston, both of which are far, during a weekday to sit and listen to the mayor give his speech. So is that maybe why Brian Gomes went with the inspector general rather than her? I do not know. I'm sure Councilor Gomes will elaborate on this when he's on the floor of the council looking for votes. Remember, the inspector general can audit documents. They can also subpoena documents. They can put people under oath, demand you answer questions, and make referrals to the U.S. attorney or the attorney general. So it is a wild development that Councilor Gomes is putting this forward, and I wonder if he'll get his colleagues to go along with it or not. Okay, 508-996-0500. Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Hi, Chris.
Hello.
So I understand, you know, how we got here. I've been listening to Mayor Mitchell say it was almost inevitable that, you know, he's got these pensions to fund fully and, you know, the state aid stayed stagnant. I get all of that. what was the cause for the surplus in December? And how did we get from a surplus in December to a $32 million deficit in May? What is he saying about that? That's the part I don't. Where did the surplus come from and where did it go?
So I'm with you in not understanding really what happened here. Because I have the letter. It's online. You can get it through the New Bedford Light, where they detail the surplus, $13 million in December. And now, because I always thought pension payments were on a schedule. You could anticipate them. That health care, I mean, I think it's probably, if I'm have to have it to guess, it's probably a radical increase in health care costs that you know, you didn't anticipate. Because sometimes those are not anticipatable. I don't know, though.
Yeah,
but that's and obviously, veteran counsel who's been doing budgets longer than anybody in the city of New Bedford, with a firm grasp on the details, he's in the same camp we are, and that's why I think he wants the inspector general to come down.
Right, and I don't even know how you can call it a surplus if you knew, you know, these things needed to be funded. If you had that money, why didn't it just go right into, you know, the pension funds or something? You know, why didn't it get, you know, put towards that? I don't know. I just don't understand how you can say there was a surplus in December of a third of what you're saying now is the deficit. I just haven't really heard him explain that. I understand why he said we were going to get to this point, but I don't know what happened to get a surplus. And you're right. I mean, insurance costs have gone up. I think Barry was saying yesterday that some of these insurance costs were like $50,000 for small businesses to get a family plan for one of their employees this year. And that's crazy. So, you know, I mean, I'm sure it did go up tremendously, but I haven't heard him explain that. That's the only thing I was wondering.
Yeah. Thank you for the call. I do appreciate it. You know, the interesting thing will be, should the city council vote for the inspector general to come in, the inspector general is also going to interview the mayor, his staff, and take some of their guidance, okay, some of their pertinent information. Otherwise, it's a sham investigation, and it's not going to be. So the city council, their behavior, their votes in this ongoing situation, because it is ongoing, are going to be on display and questioned by the inspector general. Wouldn't it be interesting if the inspector general points out the same things the mayor has been pointing out about votes by the city council, that they had the option, whether you agree with it or not, they had the option to go into the GIC or other, for instance, the pension benefits increases, the COLA increases, things like that, that the mayor points to as part of the problem that could have been solved by the city council. So wouldn't it be interesting if, because the city council requests the inspector general to come in, that the inspector general says it's these five things, as an example, that contributed to the problem, and two of them were under the purview of the city council. Wouldn't that be ironic? And maybe that would be good. The city council could see a third party as opposed to someone they reflexively rebel against, the mayor. Not all of them, but seem to do that as a body. Giving them the same opinion that the mayor has been giving them for about 13 years now. That they should be doing things differently in conjunction with the mayor. So we'll see what the city council decides to do tonight with City Councilor Brian Gomes' motion to request the inspector general come in. Let's go back to the phones. Again, it's always kind of open phones, but if you want to follow this topic, you can. Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Good morning. I want to get back to the fire department.
Sure, go ahead.
And, you know, I called Barry the other day, and I was hoping somebody would call him, but nobody is. But let me get to the point. Mm-hmm. So we're hearing this thing 80-20, 75-25, 60-40, which is relevant. I get it. But you know the question, even Barry agreed, that'd be great. What I want to know is, what is the average fireman with a health care family plan paying out of their pocket per month for that plan? And the reason I say that is, most of us have health insurance.
Right.
I'm retired. I pay $800 a month between Blue Cross, Blue Shield, and Medicaid. But I just want the perspective of how much are we asking them to basically say chip in and help us. If they're paying like $200 a month, I don't think they're going to get a hell of a lot of sympathy from anybody.
So you're saying,
I don't know.
What is the average public firefighter, whatever, public employee contribution for a family plan for health insurance? I don't think that's an unreasonable question.
In dollars.
In dollar amounts.
And it may be crazy, but I think it's an important piece of information that we could all relate to as to what we're currently paying. How much are they paying?
That's a great question. We'll put it out there.
Rather than the 75-25, that's fine and that makes sense. But in real terms, how much are they taking out of their pocket every month for a family plan? And nobody calls in. I wish the union guy would call in or even a fireman call in, and it's crickets.
Well, and thanks for the call. Thanks for the question. That's a good question. I certainly don't know the answer. But a lot of people in my audience do, and if they want to call in and offer that information, because it is relevant, as the gentleman says, and it's easy to understand than the percentages, because the percentages really mean nothing. All right, let's go back to the phones. Good morning. Thanks for holding. Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Mr. McCarty, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. You know, I did not know until I heard your broadcast this morning that Massachusetts even had an office of the Inspector General.
Really?
I always thought that was a federal thing. Yeah. Well, can you tell me, like, when's the last time there was an IG report in Massachusetts that made the news?
They make the news pretty quick.
Lately?
Well, I don't know if it's lately, but I see them out there all the time talking about stuff, and I read the reports. The really interesting, of course, I read them if they're relevant to my audience. I remember reading the one on New Bedford with the Home Depot deal years ago now that Mayor Lang requested about his predecessor and some of the people in that administration. Really interesting report.
Can I ask you, do they fall under the executive branch?
So,
are they independent? I mean, I mean, honest to God, I kind of feel stupid.
That's all right.
No, you know, because I understand that the feds have the IG. They were the ones that when the FBI said, geez, we got locked out of our phones, Lisa Page and Peter Strzok. And they said, no, the Inspector General can get through those phones.
Right.
We can open them up. But I didn't know about in the state. You know, we had, when I was a kid, when I was into state government, Joe DiNucci. Punch Drunk Joe.
Yes.
He was the auditor.
Yes.
And every once in a while, they'd come up with a good report that'd say, hey, we found this and we found that. Lately, like the last scam, I think, with the Department of Transportation was the no bid on the, rest areas contract and the state highways.
Yes.
That seemed to me that came about because the low bidder filed a lawsuit.
Right.
I didn't hear about the inspector general. I didn't hear about the auditor. I haven't heard much about these guys. They're kind of our backstop to protect our tax dollars. And I just haven't heard much about them. Could you expand on what they do?
Sure. So what you can do, rather than me talking in the abstract about it, because these reports are really interesting, and you can get them at, go on mass.gov. Mass.gov. It's a big catch-all website for the whole state government. They're going to ask you if you want to search. Go to the search bar. Put Office of the Inspector General. That'll bring you right to it. And then down below it, they'll see other choices. You know how to do the internet. If you don't, we're in trouble. You're in trouble. So, look in there, they'll say reports. You can look at the one, as an example, Senator Montigny, who represents Mattapoisett, New Bedford, Fairhaven, Acushnet, Dartmouth. Senator Montigny had the office of the Inspector General down to testify in front of his committee post-audit, okay? Very powerful committee in the Senate. The post-audit committee can subpoena people, subpoena documents, and they did a lot of the public hearings on the Mass Pike rest area contract bidding, or lack thereof. And the inspector general talked all about that. He's got a report on that as well. So, then the auditor, used to be Joe DiNucci, as the gentleman points out, from Newton, a Democrat. Now it's a Democrat from Methuen, Dinah DeSaglio. You wouldn't confuse her for, if you've seen him, you don't confuse her for Joe DiNucci, and I mean that in the best sense of the word. So, Dinah DeSaglio, she does a lot of audits. She did one of the shelter system, the migrant shelter system. Absolutely scathing. That's available for you to read and me to read. She did one on the Fall River ferry system. There's a Fall River ferry system. She did one on that. Although, interestingly, she gave pseudonyms or aliases to all the particular people in that report whose names you might know, but you can't know them from reading that report unless you know what's going on over there. I mean, it's really an interesting report from someone who's supposed to be, you know, really apolitical and all about exposing the truth. Her report on Fall River, for whatever reason, contains all pseudonyms and aliases for the pertinent players over there. Really, really funny. Anyway, I got to take a break. We'll be right back.